Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Well, welcome, everyone. I am super excited about today's show. I've got Nick Pope, who, for some of you who don't know who he is, because I know I've gotten some feedback from some of you who don't know who he is, which surprises me because, you know, he's such an important part to the field of UFOs, especially in the UK. Nick Pope actually worked for the Ministry of Defense. And if you see the misspellings on my site, that's not misspellings, actually. They spell defense and many other words different in the UK. So those aren't misspellings. That's just the British spelling. But he worked for the Ministry of Defense actually looking into UFOs, Britain's own Fox Mulder. So that's who we've got on. And this is exciting because, you know, all year long, for the past year, if you've heard me on UFOnaut Radio, and now on my show, when I go over UFO news, it's been about Britain, UFOs, British releasing UFO files, incredible stories coming out of British UFO files that are even making news and high headlines here in the States. In fact, I'm getting calls, what do you guys at MUFON think about, you know, this case and that case? So some incredible stuff going on in the UK. So there's no better authority then Nick Pope just talk about that. So we'll have him on in just a minute to give us a scoop. And I'm really curious, and I don't know that I've heard how the MOD even got into the business of at least outwardly looking into UFOs and creating a job where they have someone investigating it. So I'm really interested to talk about that as well. So we've got some great stories. I'll get into the news. And interesting enough, I have a few U.S. UFO stories, but a lot is going on internationally in UFO news, so that's kind of serendipitous for today's show. But I am going to start here in the States. One thing that we get when you're a MUFON investigator, and I'm going to send this out to my news link and the MUFON news link, so if you go to my website, you know, all of these stories you'll be able to see on the website. Or if you go to the UFO Think Tank Yahoo groups and you're on my email list, you could see these stories. But MUFON, on a monthly basis, we send out or we have a report that's sent to us on how many sightings happened the prior month. So, of course, because this is the first of the month, I just got the email today on the sightings for February. We actually had, which is on par, 500 sightings reported to us at MUFON, which is a lot. You know, sometimes these shows, CNN will talk about there were 5 UFO reports in 2007. Well, maybe 5 that they know about, but MUFON, we're getting thousands of them. 500 reports, 450 of those in the United States, about a dozen in Canada. We did get a few from Mexico and the UK. We're not the primary resource for reporting in other countries, so that's why we don't receive a lot. But and I'm sure Nick will be able to inform us more about British UFO reports. But 450 in the U.S., the top 10 states receiving sightings, New Jersey and Michigan are tied at 16. Ohio 18, Indiana 22. They're tied with us here in my home state of Colorado at 22. Interesting enough, Colorado, you know, we're usually rarely not in the top 10. Pennsylvania and Arizona had 29, which is a lot. You know, Florida 35. Usually the top states have around 30. But California with 41 and Texas with 51 sightings. So a lot of sightings. In fact, in Texas, we'll be posting more about this soon. We did get back our Stephenville radar report, and hopefully Angela Joyner and some others are listening in. I know she wanted to. And this is for the sightings in October. You might remember that CNN covered a story where this family took some video of a UFO in Stephenville, which re-brought up some excitement about UFOs out in that area. We sent some people out there and got some reports from several people. And then we also did, like before, we got some FAA radar information. Nothing as conclusive as in January. In January, we could pretty well show that there was a craft, and Robert Powell, our director of research, actually is, I think, listening in on the show, and he was able to show, and you could go look at this report, that indeed there was some craft on radar during that period of time. Now, with this October sighting, we're seeing some odd anomalies kind of in the area of some of the sightings, but nothing that definitely proves a craft. I think we need to do some more research into that. But we'll post that, and maybe some of you, if we have any radar experts out there, you can give us some insight. And we'll shop this radar information around, just like we did with the January stuff, because see if we've got something there. Also in the U.S., our UFO Examiner. If you go to examiner.com, look at UFO Examiner. He's one of the top most popular stories. His name is Roger Marsh. He is the director of communications for MUFON, and he's posting interesting stories, a lot of MUFON files on a regular basis. Some of them that he has up here this week is a UFO squadron low over Salt Lake City. So some people seeing a kind of chevron-shaped UFO similar to the Phoenix lights, but it looks like the reports talk about this chevron-shaped kind of dissipating into several different objects and then reforming into this large V shape. So some interesting reports. You can check that out. And Roger's done a great job of posting some maps of the area. Also this week, he talked about other sightings, including some sightings here in Colorado that were interesting. And he talks about Pennsylvania. Do UFOs favor Pennsylvania is the name of his story. And he says statistics say yes. And that's because for the population this year, Pennsylvania has also got a lot of sightings. This hasn't really hit national news except for the MUFON Discovery Channel show. We did an episode on the Pennsylvania UFOs. But they've been getting a lot of UFO sightings. And locally in the Pennsylvania area, if you live out there, you're aware of this because you've seen in your local media a lot of stories. And our state director out there, John Venture's done a great job with the media. They put on a conference, and he's actually going to be at our MUFON symposium this summer to talk more about those sightings. But like I said, a lot of news elsewhere throughout the world. Russia will start off with. Russia is going to make a monument dedicated to UFOs, creatures from outer space, and this is going to be in Samara Square, and I'm not sure where that is. But that's kind of a cool thing. There's going to be a sculpture, so I can't wait to see that when they get that done. They say they're going to have flying saucers, two aliens, and two space trees. I'm not sure what a space tree is, but I'm sure it will look very interesting. Speaking of looking very interesting, in Siberia, UFOs were sighted by many people, and there were some pictures taken. And I'm going to post this story of one of the pictures in a very odd-shaped object. It's kind of like a circular pattern cut in half, so like a half-circle type of shape. Very strange picture. So I'll send that out so everybody can take a look at it. But pretty interesting sighting there. We've also had a story of sightings in Greece. And then getting to the subject at hand, of course, there's always, in the last year, stories about British UFOs. We've got a couple. One from the Hamilton Advertiser, a gentleman, I believe he is a photographer, who saw something and talked about that. And then also the other news that actually I wanted to talk about, and I want to talk to Nick more about this, because there were stories about the Queen showing interest in crop circles. And unfortunately, two crop circle researchers have died recently. One of them, David Kingston, and another one, Paul Vigay. And I hope I'm saying his name right. But unfortunately, I'll post a story, but yeah, we've lost a couple crop circle researchers, so we'll talk to Nick about that too. So let's get it started. And Nick, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much for being on the show. It's great to have you. And as you, like I said, it's been British UFOs have really been dominating the news. So
yes, they have been. Yes, I agree with that totally.
Which I'm sure has been keeping you very busy.
Yes, it has been. I've done an unprecedented amount of media work in the last few months, and it's interesting. Although I'm sure we'll go on to discuss this in the course of the interview. Although I've obviously been doing a lot in the UK, I've been doing a lot in America as well, and have in fact written an op-ed for the New York Times and appeared on shows such as America's Newsroom on Fox. So I've actually managed to kind of get this subject, which is often thought of as a fringe subject, actually into the mainstream media, not just in the UK, but in America too.
Right, and those pieces were, at least especially, people don't know so much about the America's Newsroom story, and I've sent that out, I've talked about it on my show, because I thought it was a great interview that they did, and what was wonderful about it is how shocked the reporter is. And I did a story, when they covered Stephenville, that same group, the co-host, the female co-host, asked that guy, and I can't remember his name right now.
Bill, I think it's Bill.
Bill Hemmer.
That's him, yes.
She asked him, do you believe in UFOs? And he took a moment and he said yes. So I thought that was kind of a neat moment. And
people always say, I mean, this is very interesting. Sometimes people say, oh, you can't get the UFO subject into the mainstream media. Oh, they never take it seriously. You know, I've actually managed to get this subject, and I hope I don't come across as arrogant here, but I've actually managed to kind of get onto some of the world's most famous and prestigious TV news shows.
Right, and that's the truth, and I agree, and I think that largely, I know on the show, Bill Hemmer was so shocked. They both were so shocked by what you were saying because of your credentials. And that gets back to what I want to start off with, which is a little history, is that you worked for the Ministry of Defense investigating UFOs.
That's correct, yes.
How did that come about?
Well, it dates back to 1950, and actually, the Ministry of Defense's chief scientific advisor, Sir Henry Tizard, one of the great pioneers of radar, he'd been brought back into government by Winston Churchill. He said, look, I'm aware of these UFO reports that are coming in from America. He said, as chief scientific advisor to the Ministry of Defense, my view is that we should not be writing this subject off without some form of proper scientific investigation. So he said, look, I don't know what this is, Maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing, but we need to be looking at this. And that's how the Ministry of Defense first became involved, and they set up a study called the Flying Saucer Working Party. And they looked into all this, and that basically was the genesis of the work that I actually found myself carrying out in the 90s.
And how large was this Flying Saucer Working Party? Is that what it?
Yes, the Flying Saucer Working Party was fairly small scale. It was basically a kind of mixture of civil servants, military personnel, and intelligence operatives, and they kind of between them all tried to come to a conclusion about the phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. And just like here, I mean, people think of Blue Book and things like that. That was actually a small group, too, of only a few people. So,
yes. I should say we were a small group. Mm-hmm. We were a very small group, but we had a big reach. The point was that we were only 2, 3, 4 people. But the point was that when we wanted to bring people in, when we wanted expert help and advice, we could do that. So to give a couple of practical examples, if we wanted radar tapes checked, we could phone up the appropriate Air Force officers, get that done. If we wanted photos or videos analyzed, again, we could find specialists to do that. So we were a small group, but we could call on a vast number of specialists to help us when we needed it.
Okay, so this started in the 50s, and then you continued that, and then you were a part of it in the 90s.
Yes.
Were you approached to become part of this group?
Yes, I was. I had joined the Ministry of Defense in 1985, and the typical career pattern was that you would serve 2 or 3 years in a particular post, and then you would be moved on either on level transfer or promotion somewhere else. And it just so happened that in 1991, I had been working on the in the Joint Operations Center in the first Gulf War, and I had been working for a particular individual. And I think he respected my work ethic and my ability. And he said, look, I know that you're looking for your next posting after this one. He said, after the Gulf War is finished, would you like to come and work for me? And I said, yeah, what's the job? And he said, UFOs. I said, okay, right. I had no knowledge about UFOs. I had no belief in it, no particular interest in it. I said, yeah, okay, what's that all about? So to me, this was simply another government job.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have any apprehensions? Were you kind of like, oh, great, this sounds kind of ridiculous, or?
Yes, I was a little worried.
Mm-hmm.
I was somebody who at the time had done a number of very high-profile and sensitive jobs. I considered myself, and I think my managers considered, that I was on the fast track for a series of promotions and posts at the highest level in the Ministry of Defense. So I thought, well, my goodness, is this going to affect my career? Is this like the kiss of death? Is this sort of an area that I don't want to get into? I sort of took the job, and I discovered that it involved for example, work with the defense intelligence staff. So I made a number of important contacts career-wise there. But I was a little worried as to how this would affect my career. But at the end of the day, I took the job, and I didn't regret it.
Mm-hmm. Were you skeptical about the nature of UFOs when you took that job?
Yes, I was. I thought it was complete rubbish, to be perfectly honest with you. I had no real knowledge or interest about it. I thought it was nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of thought, UFOs, little green men, what's all this about? But I delved into the files. I had access, of course, to all the files going back to the 50s when I sort of discussed Sir Henry Tizard, the MOD's chief scientific advisor, the fact that he, of all people, would have an interest in this and sort of say that this should be looked into. I had access to his files, the files of all my predecessors, and I gradually came round to the view that, there's something quite interesting here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't necessarily say that any of this was extraterrestrial, but I thought, goodness, the Ministry of Defense has been looking at this for decades. There are some incredibly interesting cases here. UFOs seen by pilots, police officers, military personnel, UFOs tracked on radar, that sort of thing. So I found myself becoming increasingly drawn into this subject.
Mm-hmm. What was some of the early research that really opened your eyes, that really maybe made you think and maybe shocked you? Or...
Well, there were some cases from the 1950s where there were some sightings over military bases where Air Force officers were the witnesses, where UFOs were tracked on radar, where UFOs were seen performing speeds and they seemed capable of maneuvers that seemed above and beyond anything that we could do. So I looked at these cases and with the UFO phenomenon, there's always a difficulty about credibility, about where is this sourced from. I was, of course, looking at the Ministry of Defense's own case files. And I was looking at these case files, and I was saying, my goodness, this is not some member of the public phoning up and giving an opinion. This is an Air Force officer submitting an official report and putting in gun camera footage, radar tapes to back up the testimony. So that made me absolutely stop and think and reevaluate my views on the whole phenomenon.
So what did you start to, and even now, do you hypothesize around the nature of the phenomenon?
I do and I don't. Obviously, I've got to sort of intellectually wonder about it and sort of think, well, what is all this? But if you ask me now, what do I think UFOs are? My honest answer is I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. I look at this field, and I see it's a field full of self-proclaimed experts who absolutely think that they've got the inside track on this, and they absolutely know. The one thing I know from, and I served 21 years in the Ministry of Defense, the one thing I always look for in all of this is, show me the person who says, I don't know. And very often, that's the person you need to speak to. So many people have an opinion. So many people think they've got all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
the real insiders are very often the people who say, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't have a clue. I don't know what this is. And that's me. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, you know, and I find the best minds are in that arena, from Alan Hynek even to, let's say, John Mack or other great minds in the field. They're willing to say, and I don't know, and continue to speculate on ideas that I think frustrate people because it's not a black and white type of thing. But I found the same thing. Typically, if you go to a lecture and it starts off with, you know, someone saying they've got it all figured out and they know what's going on, probably that's not going to be a very good lecture.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's great to hear from, you know, some of the best minds. It's keeping our minds open to what might be going on.
Yes, absolutely. Look for the person who says, I don't know. Look for the person who says, well, that could be, but I'm not sure. And I always think those people are worth listening to far more than the people who kind of begin their lecture or whatever with, let me tell you the way it is. Mm-hmm. Those people, in my experience, are, you know, they're not the real people.
Now, I want to get into, you know, addressing some of what I know lots of the conspiracy guys are thinking. They're probably thinking, you know, was your group really the end-all, be-all investigative group? Do you think there are, and we do hear a lot of, you know, rogue intelligence agencies in Britain, you know, that are out there doing kind of their own thing. Do you think there are other groups like that, or do you think, you know, your group was given all access?
Well, you know, this is back to the kind of really difficult issue of not being able to prove a negative.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I can't absolutely put my hand on my heart and say, that I was it. There was no one else. I mean, of course, there is a possibility that there was somebody standing behind myself, looking at the information that I had, sort of shadow project, as it were. But my best assessment of the situation is that I had those two things which I think are important and relevant. I had the so-called need to know. I was running the UFO project, and I had access not just to the public, but to the police, the military, the Air Force, the radar, the intelligence, whatever. So I have that. And the other thing is that, I have the security clearances. And it's not an area that I can discuss in any detail, but I think taken together, that combination of having the need to know and the security clearance, I think that I have the inside track on this. Of course, I can't prove it 100%, but I think that if there was any UFO information in the UK, I had access to it.
Did you ever run across, because it would seem that if you were being, at least it seems like in the States, when there are groups, even military witnesses who say they were working on this or working on that, or they had a sighting and they collected information, there's always some mysterious group or mysterious superiors that come in and say, okay, hand that over to us, and then they disappear and nobody hears from these guys again. Did you run across that?
I've certainly heard those sorts of accusations.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, I was able to trace that back to people we knew about. In other words, to give an example, if we have an interesting UFO case, somebody would say, we need to take possession of the radar tapes. We will come and collect them, and we'll take them back to Ministry of Defense main building. But that wasn't, I was going to say some people might find that sinister, but actually I didn't, because I knew who these people were and I knew why they were asking. So yeah, occasionally you did get these sorts of requests, but I had the inside track on that, and you know, basically, bottom line is I was the guy doing the asking.
Mm-hmm. So then, I guess overall, you would feel that you have a pretty good handle on the breadth of knowledge on UFOs that the British government has.
I hope so, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly like to think so. I'm hopefully not so arrogant to say that I absolutely have you know, the final position on this, but it was my job. I did that job for 3 or 4 years. I worked closely with defense intelligence. And yes, I think that if there was something going on that, A, I knew about it, and B, actually, I was at the heart of it.
Cool. Gotcha. Well, that's cool. That's great because, you know, I just wanted to establish that moving on and get your thoughts that way. So, and, you know, I think that, you know, just like I talked about with our military, people have a sense, you know, of whether or not they're kind of being watched over, or there's some kind of group secret, more secret than they are. So that's some good input, because I think you'd probably know about that. All right. Well, then my next question, what I want to get into next is, you know, a little bit more history before we get into some of the modern things that have been going on. So I wanted to ask you about Rendlesham Forest, of course.
Okay.
That's a big story here in the United States regarding UFOs because of all the evidence. And those were official documents that came out of the UK. So we're really excited about that. What insights do you have, and what do you think about that case? And maybe if you could kind of give a short overview of what happened there.
Sure. This is Britain's best-known UFO case, and actually, in terms of the evidence, I think it's arguably bigger than Roswell, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of there being witnesses on the record prepared to speak about this on camera. Basically, over a series of nights, over Christmas 1990, personnel at two United States Air Force military bases in the United Kingdom, Bentwaters and Woodbridge, recorded and saw UFOs in the sky, and indeed some of them reported these things landing. A number of people went out to investigate. Again, all these people's names are in the public domain. All this is checkable. On the first night they saw this thing land, they took a Geiger counter out to the landing site. They found that the radiation levels that they recorded, according to the Ministry of Defense's own experts in the defense intelligence staff, they said that these readings were, quote, significantly higher than background, unquote. That's by a factor of about 8 times. The deputy base commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt, was one of the witnesses himself. And again, he described a UFO. He described it firing a beam of light down at him and his patrol, and he described it firing a beam of light at a particularly sensitive part of the military establishment. So essentially, this is this is a very interesting case. Multiple witness events. Most of the witnesses are military. The UFO was tracked on radar very briefly, and the defense intelligence staff assessed the radiation readings as significantly higher than background. So in terms of when people say, well, what's the evidence for UFO sightings, you're actually talking about a multiple witness event. The witnesses were military. You've got evidence in terms of radar, radiation readings. It's a very interesting and strong case.
It's a big story then out there in the UK too, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So would it be more akin to our Roswell out there?
Yes. This case has sometimes been called Britain's Roswell.
Yeah.
But it's a case. it's a case that's been featured on a number of mainstream media programs, not just in the UK, but in the US. This case has been discussed, for example, on Larry King Live. It's been discussed on UFO Hunters, the History Channel show. So yeah, there's a lot out there.
Yeah, I think that's like you said, I think it probably is the best case as well, because you still have these military guys coming out and talking about their stories, like on Larry King, when really, with Roswell, we have the son of Jesse Marcel Jr., or Jesse Marcel, talking about, you know, what had gone on. But unfortunately, Jesse Marcel has passed on, so he's not around to talk about what he had seen. And he was one person compared to several related to the Rendlesham Forest.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've met Jesse Marcel Jr., and he's a nice guy, and clearly someone with a very important story to tell. But yes, I do agree that the problem with Roswell is that because this was over 60 years ago, this whole incident is passing from history into legend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very difficult. Whereas with the Rendlesham Forest incident, there are a number of people, mainly, of course, in the United States Air Force, who now retired, are prepared to go on the record and to discuss on camera their involvement in this incident. And, of course, this is hugely important. This is hugely important.
I thought, you know, that Larry King obviously was very interested in that case, which was really cool. And I think with his interviews, you know, it was – I don't understand how someone can watch that show and doubt, you know, those experiences and what had happened. And I thought that the debunker that was brought on, I call him that, but of course he feels he's probably a professional looking for answers. James Magaha, the astronomer – really, I mean, it's almost, it kind of demonstrated, I think, and maybe you could agree, the frustration we run across with these so-called experts they bring in to poo-poo these stories when he's telling these guys, and I know Larry King was astonished that he could say this, that the object they're touching that is within feet of them, which is a large object on the ground, is a star that they were, you know, not seeing correctly, or a light tower off in the distance.
No, absolutely. Larry King, I think, has got a genuine interest in this. I've been on his show a couple of times. I have sympathy for James Magaha. You know, he was obviously brought in to be the sort of renter skeptic on this. In terms of media balance, there obviously has to be someone, but he clearly was out of his depth. He wasn't familiar with the case. You know, he sort of fell back on the sort of tired old the planet Venus sort of, you know, mm-hmm. explanation. He never spoke to any of the witnesses. He didn't have access to the defense intelligence staff assessment of the landing site in terms of the radiation readings. I'm not saying he was set up, but he was clearly someone just brought up to bring in balance, but he didn't know the case, and you know, he sort of, for those that do, rather embarrassed himself. But you know, I don't criticize him for that. There's no reason why he would have been familiar with the government documents that I've seen on this case, for example.
Now, what is the feeling of maybe your colleagues inside of the government in regards to that case?
That's a very interesting question. The official position of the Ministry of Defence is we don't know what this was. But I actually, by one of these slightly bizarre coincidences that sometimes happen in government, found myself years later working for somebody who was in that division at the time. And he was a very, very senior person in the Ministry of Defence just before I left. And I discussed with this with him, of course, and he said to me, and the, you know, the quote, "This was the one case that we couldn't explain. We had no idea. We didn't know what to do, who to call, what to think. No, they were completely unsure about this."
And that makes me wonder, what do your colleagues in the government think about, you know, the work that you were doing and that the position that you had investigating the UFOs?
Well, most of them were interested. A lot of them said, "My goodness, you're doing the UFO job. What do you think about it? What do you know?" And even though I worked for the Ministry of Defence for 21 years, I left in 2006, but I still get invited back to retirement parties, promotion parties, Christmas dues, all those sorts of things. So I'm still very much in touch with my former colleagues there, and they're genuinely fascinated by this. They say, "Well, you know, we can't get access to any of this, but we think it's interesting. What do you think?"
Mm-hmm. And do you have the same issue? Because we have the issue here, of course, where there may be some people who are interested privately, but publicly they give the impression that they're not, because they're worried about reputation. Is that happen to a large degree?
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment. And of course, I sort of came across that issue myself. I was worried that this would affect my career. I thought of myself as a high-flying government employee who was destined for the very top, and I thought, well, I hope this issue isn't going to be the kiss of death. I at the time played it very low key, but it was fascinating, you know. Despite playing it low key, people at every level, from the most junior administrative clerical staff member to actually defense ministers themselves, said to me on occasion, "You say, what's this all about? What do you know?"
Well, and that, you know, talking about all levels, brings me back to the Queen. I know the story came out that the Queen, you know, had on her reading list many books about crop circles. Do you know if she also had an interest in UFOs? Or
this is a quite a difficult area for me, and of course, even though I've left the Ministry of Defence, I'm still bound by the Official Secrets Act, and that binds me for life. Yes, I know that some members of the royal family have had an interest in UFOs, crop circles, the unexplained more generally, but you know, this isn't, because of my security oath, this isn't an area that I can really discuss in any great detail, I'm afraid.
Well, that's actually kind of a fun answer. You know, so I certainly don't want to push you on that at all anymore, but that's kind of a fun answer, too, that you can't officially speak on that. So
sure, you can mm-hmm. obviously read into that what you
right.
like, but it's just, you know, that there are some issues that are rather sensitive and that I can't discuss.
Yeah. Well, it was neat to read about the Queen and the crop circle interests and everything, and it was also unfortunate this week to read, and I'm not sure if you were familiar with these gentlemen, you probably were, the two researchers who died recently.
Yes, Paul, Paul B.J.,
right.
I think, and David Kingston,
right.
I hope I got that right. But very, very sad news that two people who have been very, very involved and interested in the crop circle and indeed the UFO issue have passed away. And, whatever one's religious beliefs are, I guess one hopes that they now know all the answers to this.
Right. Well, and is crop circles an area that you all looked into?
Yes. Not because it was formally in my terms of reference, but inevitably running the British government's UFO project, because of the perceived link between UFOs and crop circles, I got drawn into that particular debate. I certainly found myself looking into all this. I don't, really know what to make of it. I mean, I think it's fairly clear that most of these things, certainly in the United Kingdom, were made by people, and I've seen some of them do it, and very skilled they are too. But I keep an open mind, I think it's an interesting subject, and the debate will go on.
Yeah, and so you do find it a mysterious thing, and it's not just a human man-made phenomena?
Well, I think most of them are. But,
mm-hmm.
The one thing I've learned in my government work is never say never.
Mm-hmm.
There are strange things out there. And, I try never to close my eyes and close my mind to some of the more exotic possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Was that a James Bond movie?
I think it probably was. I'm slipping into James Bond quotes here. Gosh, how sad is that?
Well, that's kind of neat, because I think that's some of the fun, with it. When I was thinking of this interview, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about, especially my generation, the effect that James Bond has had, especially with our perspective about the UK and the secrets and the spying and all of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, which I'm sure, I'm not saying that that's accurate, but it certainly gives us this kind of legend and mythos around what goes on over there.
Well, no, a lot is, and I have friends who used to be in MI5, Britain's Security Service, and of course I worked in the Ministry of Defence for 21 years, so there's no smoke without fire. These are interesting issues.
Well, let's get more into current day and getting into, I guess let's start off with the government opening the files. So these files that they're opening, are they files that were a result of what the Flying Saucer Working Party kind of worked on?
Yes, the Flying Saucer Working Party basically, was the genesis of British involvement in this issue. So the files that are being opened now are basically their investigation files. The MOD has been looking at this since 1950. Some of the older files have been released and have been in the public domain for many years. But yes, the material that's been released now is very much material that has its roots in the Flying Saucer Working Party. Most of the material is actually quite mundane. I mean, of course, 95% of these things turn out to be misidentifications of aircraft, lights, weather balloons, meteors, bright stars and planets, that sort of thing. But as the conspiracy theorists say, the best place to hide a book is in a library. You've got to wade through all this material and find the good stuff. And there is some good stuff in there. There are some very interesting UFO cases in the files that have been released, and they're all available on the National Archives website.
Yeah, there are some great stories or cases that have been coming out, and we'll get into some of those. But I wanted to ask you, how did that come about? How did it come about that the British government decided to do this?
Essentially, our Freedom of Information Act came fully into force, I think it was 1st of January 2003. I might be wrong on that. But the interesting thing was that when they totted up the statistics, they found that the Ministry of Defense got more Freedom of Information Act requests on UFOs than any other subject, including the war in Iraq or Afghanistan. And in response to that, basically the pressure to release the UFO files was you know, intolerable. They said the workload dealing with this on a case-by-case basis was becoming unbearable. They simply couldn't keep up. So they said, look, this is the number one subject people want to know about. We are going to have to release the files, otherwise we're just absolutely going to sink here. So that was what happened.
And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about some of the other releases that other countries have been doing are not necessarily genuine, where they're just kind of throwing us a bone and giving us a few files as opposed to the bulk of the files. Do you feel that what we're getting from Britain in this kind of rolling release is going to be everything they have, or the majority of it?
Yes, I think it is. We honestly, hand on heart, don't have a sort of spaceship in a hangar type smoking gun. If there is such a thing, either A, I wasn't cleared for it, or B, you know, there was nothing in Britain at all, and the secret lay elsewhere. But yeah, Britain, to the best of my knowledge, is disclosing absolutely everything it has on this subject. As you said in your question, others are doing the same or have done the same. The French government have done it. The Danes have done it. The Brazilians have done it. The Italians, I know, have released some information. So, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Now, early on, and I think – I'm not sure if this was the first story, but and you can correct me if I'm off, but it seems like the first story that came out, which is about the same time that the files opened, was the police chasing a UFO in a helicopter. I think that's May of last year.
Yes, in fact, there have been a couple of cases involving near misses between police forces and helicopters. One took place at an Air Force base, RAF St Athan, in Wales. And in that particular incident, the helicopter was coming into land. The pilot saw something flash across his field of vision, and basically no one quite knows what this thing was. The radar data was inconclusive. There was another case, and this involved a near miss between a police helicopter and a UFO over Britain's second most popular city, Birmingham. And in this particular case, the pilot had to take evasive action, and there was a report done by the Air Proximity Board, which is jointly sponsored by the Ministry of Defence and the Civil Aviation Authority, which is the UK's equivalent of the Americans' FAA. And they said, yeah, the pilot took evasive action. There was something there. There was something on the radar. We don't know what it was. So, you know, whatever you think about UFOs, whether you're a skeptic or a believer, that's the sort of case that makes me think, whatever this is, there are serious defense, national security, and flight safety issues.
Right. And now there's a video that came out, and it's a pretty impressive video, I think, and I believe you're probably aware of the video I'm referring to, because it was credited as being a video taken from one of these police helicopters. Is that correct, or do you know?
Now, I'm not sure about this. There have been a number of rumors about this, but uh-huh. Very often some of these stories where they say we've got videos tend not to be correct. So I don't want to kind of pronounce on that, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, because this one says it was June 8th near Cardiff. And
that will certainly be the Wales one, but I'm not 100% sure that the official video, if there is one, has been released. So I want to be cautious on that, because I would not want to endorse something that is not official.
Gotcha. So what I'll do is I'll send you that video, and I'd like to see what you think, because it's very impressive video. It shows the same piece that is on infrared and uninfrared. Uninfrared, it looks like kind of this elongated object with one side that's lit. Not the trailing side, but kind of the right-hand side, because it's moving. It's not moving. I don't know how to explain. You know, it's just moving across. And then on the infrared, you can see the whole thing lit up against the background. So it's a neat video. I'll forward that to you and see what you think.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take a look at that. As mm-hmm. I say, I'm just I hear about all of these things, and I'm
right.
Generally reluctant to sort of give a snap judgment.
Makes sense. No, and that's definitely very well appreciated. And I did put that link in the chat room. So now, was that story part of that story? Kind of came out in the news around the time that the British UFO files released. It wasn't one of the British UFO files that they released. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. The British government's release of UFO files, the first batch, was released in May 2008, the second batch in October 2008. In both those cases, I was actually involved in this release. Because I worked on this, the National Archives asked me to review the files and to maybe pick out some sort of interesting cases. But in neither of those cases, the police helicopter incident that we've discussed took place after that. So that was very much separate.
Mm-hmm. And the involvement that you did have, so from what I understand, they came to you first before they release the files to ask your advice?
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Because I had actually worked on these files, they said, well, look, you're obviously familiar with these. We're not. Can you help us pick out some cases that might be of interest to the media, to the public? And they asked me to do a video cast, a podcast, and they generally sort of, you know, when they got media inquiries, they sort of said, well, we'll speak to Nick because he was the guy who worked on all this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was happy to do that because, to my mind, this was a good news story about open government and freedom of information. So I was happy, even though I'd left government, but National Archives is part of government, and as they say, you never really leave. I was happy to do them a favor.
Mm-hmm. And for the most part, you know, the media seemed to treat this whole thing pretty well and take it pretty seriously.
Yes, absolutely. People, it's very interesting. Ufologists often complain that they can't get the subject in the media at all. When it is in the media, they complain that, you know, it's not taken seriously enough. But this was a classic example of the media taking the subject extremely seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Appeared on you know, most of the UK's leading TV shows, on the BBC and elsewhere, about this, and as I say, in relation to the release of the British government's UFO files, I've appeared not just on British shows but on American shows too, like King Live, America's Newsroom. I've written an op-ed on the New York Times, and people in the UFO community were saying, my goodness, why is it that it takes a Brit to get into the New York Times on all this? But you know, that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, we already talked about, I think it's your credibility, your background, but it's also, I think, the perspective you have, because your perspective is that the British government is being genuine. You're not being overly critical or critical when, like a lot of UFO researchers can be when referring to this material. But yeah,
well,
I thought.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that totally. My view is that I call it how I see it. So certainly. My view is that you know, people sort of say you know, what does the British government know about this? What does the British government think about this? And I call it how I see it. I say, well, you know, bottom line is we don't know. So I'm not one of these people. I mean, this is the interesting thing. I'm not one of these people saying this is the way it is. Let me tell you the truth about UFOs. Truth of the matter is, I don't know the truth about UFOs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've found, because, you know, we try to be similar with MUFON and not being critical, but just relaying information. And sometimes it's frustrating to people when they ask, well, what was it? You know, what's your conclusion? And we say, we don't know. Here's what the data shows us. But at the same time, they appreciate it and they come back to us, I think, because of that. But, like you said, you know, it was incredible. It was a big news when you had your story in the New York Times. Everybody was real excited about that. And the American Newsroom piece was also fun because your credentials and, you know, Bill Hemmer was genuinely shocked by what you had said, especially when you said there were dog bites. He was like, you're kidding me. You know?
Yes. Somebody posted that on YouTube, and, I hate to do an ego search, but I did actually look at that to review the interview, and yes, it was. Yeah, he did stop and draw breath, shall we say?
Mm-hmm. Well, and there have been, it seems like, on a regular basis. Now, I guess to address first the media frenzy going over in Britain, because even just prior to the files being released, it seems like British media was really starting to go UFO crazy, and that's continued to this day.
Yes, very much so. The British media, it's interesting. If you talk to UFO people, they say, oh, we can never get this subject into the media. We can never get them to take it seriously. I actually work, now I've left the MOD, as a freelance journalist. And I have no difficulty getting this subject into the mainstream media at all. Television, radio, newspapers, no problem at all. The media are genuinely interested in this. And it's very interesting. There is a difference, I think, between Britain and America here. But certainly in the UK, our number one best-selling newspaper, The Sun, has put this subject, UFOs, on the front page twice in the last 7 or 8 months. Now, can you imagine the New York Times, the Washington Post, putting a UFO story on the front page as their main headline?
Right. And, you know, I need you to back me up on something regarding The Sun, actually, because I get a little embarrassed sending people links to The Sun. And, you know, on my shows I say, you know, that The Sun is a serious newspaper, even though it's got the topless girls on the front cover and all the bikini girls. And, you know, I honestly will find myself distracted when I go to the site. I'm clicking the links and looking at the girls. I'm like, why did I come to here again? Oh, yeah, the UFO story.
Yeah.
But it is a serious paper over there.
It is. Let me kind of, this may not be kind of widely appreciated, but in the UK, there are about 6 national daily newspapers. The Sun is one of them. Yes, they are unashamedly populist. They listen to what, you know, the person in the average bar says, and they reflect that. They kind of have their finger on the pulse, as it were. It's not, you know, necessarily the newspaper that you would go for the most in-depth commentary over tens of thousands of words over a mainstream political story. But the Sun is what the people think over here. It's what the people read. It's what the people are interested in. And they are genuinely interested in the UFO story. They think it's fascinating. They don't particularly have an agenda. They don't say what UFOs are or aren't, but they are interested in it, and they run UFO stories. And it's kind of interesting because the UFO lobby for years have complained that the mainstream media don't take this seriously, and then the moment they do. The funny thing is that, they're not satisfied with it. They're trivializing the subject, et cetera, et cetera.
I agree.
But The Sun, The Sun are absolutely Britain's best-selling national daily newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
They are a force in this country. And when they say something, people sit up and pay attention. And when they put a UFO story on the front page, as they have done twice in the last 7 months or so, that's a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. You know, I was doing a talk last year, an analysis, which included the Bill Hemmer video, him saying he believes in video UFOs. You know, I was showing Stephenville clips with Angela Joyner, who's in our chat and joining us right now, it looks like. And then also...
Oh, well, tell her I say hi. She's actually a Facebook friend of mine.
Yeah, she's wonderful. But also, what was it? Oh, now I'm forgetting. But it was one of the major news ones, the ones with Matt Lauer and the famous news weather guy, and I can't believe I'm forgetting their name right now, but still with Anne Rice, and they were asked, do you believe in UFOs? And they said, yes, we do believe in UFOs. And they're like, you're kidding. You think they're possibly even extraterrestrials flying around? And they're like, yeah, we totally believe that's possible. So that was huge, too. Good Morning America, I think. But that was also big. I thought 2008 was a great news year. But there were some stories coming out where people said, no, it was an awful news year. So you have those perspectives. I think it's getting better all of the time. And in fact, one of the big stories, it seems like the media over there and here are picking up some of these Britain UFO stories, and they're getting over here as well. I know a story that did break and got really big over here. In fact, I was called on it by several different media sources, was the Noe Torres case.
Yes, Milton Torres.
Or Milton Torres, I'm sorry.
Milton Torres, mm-hmm. Yes. This was a report in the last batch of UFO files released by the Ministry of Defense. So this came out on October 20th last year. Milton Torres was a former United States Air Force pilot based at RAF Manston in Kent. And he spoke about an incident. He doesn't know the exact date, but he believes it was 1956 or 57, when he was essentially scrambled in response to reports of UFO in British airspace. And he basically, his story is, I was given a shoot-down order. He said the chain of command, and obviously he was in constant touch via radio. He said I was told that whatever this thing is, I don't know what it is, but it's in our airspace. I was ordered to shoot it down, and he you know, his testimony is on the website, on the Ministry of Defense website. And elsewhere, you can just put Milton Torres into the internet. You'll find details. He said, basically, I was ordered to shoot this thing down.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he prepared to fire his rocket, but before he could do so, this thing, whatever it was, just flew away. Far too fast to track, but essentially he said it was there. I was given a shoot down order. I was ready to fire, but it went.
Yeah, and it's funny how the media is, though. I mean, for the most part, they're pretty good, but you can tell when they're searching for a certain story and you don't give it to them. I got a call from the Air Force Times, and, you know, they ask these leading questions where they're trying to get you to kind of say, oh, you know, they're to try to kind of explain it away. But he was really interested. I told him, actually, you know, Major George Filer, you're probably aware that in 1962, he was asked to go investigate a UFO over Britain. And then also Cooper, the astronaut Gordon Cooper in 1951 over Germany had seen a formation of UFOs. So I mentioned those, and he was interested, but unfortunately no story was printed by the Air Force Times.
Yeah, no, that's difficult. You know, I'm next month or in the next next month or so, I'm going to be meeting Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Great.
Of course, sixth man on the moon, and obviously an all-American hero. Somebody that I very much admire and respect, and he's got some interesting views on UFOs, of course, as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the big news, the reason you were on Fox, was to talk about and to confirm that the pilots were ordered to shoot down UFOs.
Well, I can't obviously discuss details of rules of engagement, because that's a very sensitive and highly classified area. But obviously, and I think what I can say is that there are circumstances where the use of lethal force would be authorized. That's something that I've discussed in the media. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's a prudent policy, or that's a good idea?
Well, I'm not going to get into a detailed discussion, I'm afraid, about
okay.
rules of engagement, because although I left the MOD in 2006, the Official Secrets Act binds me for life, and it's simply not an area that I can enter into any great discussion about. But as I say, the bottom line is, of course, there are some circumstances under which the use of lethal force can be authorized. That's, I think, about as far as I can go on that.
Okay. Well, some of the other stories that have, been coming around I know that have been big out there, there was the windmill, which doesn't seem to be, well, there were a lot of sightings around that windmill that kind of fell apart.
Yes, that's true. The story about the apparent collision between a UFO and a wind turbine in Lincolnshire, and this is a story that I've commentated about extensively in the media here in the UK, in many of the mainstream newspaper and television sort of channels. Something that it was interesting. Members of the public saw lights in the sky. They heard some strange sounds, and at about 4 in the morning, many people were awoken by what they characterized at the time as an explosion. And the following morning, one of the wind turbines was found to have been destroyed. These things are about 290 feet tall. They have 3 blades. Each blade is about 66 feet in length. One blade was completely smashed off. One other blade was bent out of shape. Something, the consensus was, that the theory was, that something had collided with this thing. The manufacturers, the electricity company, took some forensic samples, and they sent them back to the manufacturers in Germany to sort of say, well, can you shed any light on this? And they couldn't. The report came back a week or two ago, and it was inconclusive. It's a very interesting story, and again, it's a story that The Sun, Britain's best-selling national daily newspaper, put on the front page.
I saw the latest story was that the German company had said it was due to metal fatigue.
My information is that what they said is that there's no evidence of a collision, And metal fatigue was one of the possible theories. But if you look, and you can check this, I think, on Google News, if you look at what the company was saying at the time, I think they were a little more skeptical on that. So I think the jury is still out on this case. It's an interesting one. I'm not saying there's necessarily any exotic explanation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the initial view seemed to be that there was something a little odd about this.
Yeah, coupled with the sightings that happened around there. And it was, you know, there were quite a few people, is that correct, that had sightings?
Yeah. No, I mean, many, many people in the local area basically said that they had seen some strange things, and that they had heard as well some strange things. A number of people, as I think I said, said that they had been woken up at about 4 a.m. By a loud crashing sound, which they thought was an explosion. And it was subsequently postulated that these people had heard something, whatever it might be, collide with the wind turbine.
Mm-hmm. So moving away from that in the last few minutes that we have, what do you think are some of the more impressive stories, maybe that we haven't heard much about, coming out of the files?
Well, I think if I can get away from the files, one of the most interesting and important stories that's come out is David Cameron, who is the leader of the Conservative Party here in the United Kingdom, and very possibly, therefore, the next Prime Minister here in the UK when we have an election, was asked, what do you think about UFOs, and are you prepared to release information about this into the public domain? And he was ambushed on this story at a political meeting, and he didn't know really how to react to this, but he basically said, yes, of course I support freedom of information, I'm committed to the release of all documents on this, he said, and I don't know about this issue, he said, but if there is something on all this, he said, I don't see any reason to keep it secret, and I would want to see it all put into the public domain. So this obviously will come back to haunt him. He may well be the next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and he's recently been on the record on the UFO issue, which is very interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm, very. Yeah, that is a good story. Are there some others?
I think one of the other interesting stories is that the Ministry of Defence recently released information about numbers of UFO sightings reported to them last year, and they said in 2008 they had received 285 UFO reports. Interestingly, that was more than double the figure for 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's an interesting story. There's another story that the MOD have shifted responsibility for the UFO issue from Ministry of Defence headquarters in Whitehall in London to the headquarters Air Command, which is basically an Air Force unit. So again, responsibility for the UFO issue has shifted from the government to the military. So there's a lot going on over here in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about the reports doubling, do you think it's due to increased activity or just perhaps more people being aware that they can report?
I think it's a bit of both. I think obviously, ultimately, the UFO subject is events-led, and if there aren't sightings, they won't be reported.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, self-evidently, when you have reports about UFOs in the mainstream media, when you have them on the front page of Britain's best-selling national daily newspaper, when you have them on mainstream television and radio programs,
mm-hmm.
obviously when people listen into these things, see these things, and they see that, UFOs are being reported by pilots, police officers, military personnel when they're being tracked on radar, they feel, I think, a little bit more confident about reporting things
mm-hmm.
within themselves. And they say, well, you know, well, okay, if an RAF officer reports something on duty and it's tracked on radar, then maybe I won't be disbelieved. And these people feel free to you know, step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm. Now, Angela said hello, and she had a question. Do you see or do you have knowledge that any other countries will be releasing their UFO files anytime soon?
No, I don't. Obviously, we here in Britain are in the process of doing it. The French have done it. The Danes have done it. The Brazilians have done it. I think the Italians have done some material too. But no, I don't know. But what I would say is that this is almost what you would call the domino effect. When one country does it, it puts pressure on others to do it, particularly countries where they say, oh, yes, there's nothing here, there's nothing to worry about. Because, of course, people say, well, if there's nothing to worry about, if it's not an issue, if the British government have done it, if the French have done it, Danes have done it, the Brazilians have done it, why can't you do it? So I don't know. In a sense, I'm interested to see where the spotlight will fall next. And it may be,
mm-hmm.
it may well be that there's some country that we haven't thought of in all of this that has a very interesting piece of the puzzle. So,
Yep. And do you think that the U.S., we've only got a minute to answer this question, but do you think the U.S. has more secrets than you all out there in this area?
I don't know. I don't know who has
mm-hmm.
secrets to reveal. I can't call how this will turn out.
Gotcha. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. We're pretty much out of time. You can go visit Nick Pope's website at nickpope.net. And do you have any departing comments?
No, only that I would say, that I think we live in interesting times in regard to this subject, that obviously people will be tracking the subject through Google News and other websites. And I think watch this space. Interesting times and interesting revelations and more to come.
Yep. Well, thank you very much. You know, and I should mention that MUFON is coupled up with Roswell to bring the speakers in. And, of course, that's fallen in my lap. But Nick Pope will be in Roswell this year. That's the weekend from July 2nd to 5th. We mentioned Jesse Marcel Jr. earlier today. He's going to be there. Travis Walton, Paula Harris, a lot of great speakers. So you can come see Nick this summer in Roswell in our, big UFO story for the U.S. So come check that out. Thank you, Nick, very much for being on the show. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's extraordinary. And I think that, you are doing a lot of great work with getting this in the forefront in your country and in our country. So that's wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, thanks for being on
thank
the show.
You.
And that's it for today. I don't have the speaker completely solidified, or the interview solidified for next week. However, March 12th, 6 p.m., which is actually a Thursday, I will be interviewing Clifford Stone, who claims to have been part of Crash Retrieval group. But thank you guys for joining us all, and I will talk to you all soon.